This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. This is the place where government actions meet business decisions. Online at www.bgov.com and on the air Thursdays at 11 and Fridays at 2:30 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This week, we're diving into the technology sector headfirst, trying to tackle cybersecurity. No little task, especially considering Congress couldn't seem to make a decision on this before the November election. They're going to address it again when they come back after the election, but is that soon enough? We'll also be joined by Kirsten Todd Kuhn, President and CEO of Liberty Group Ventures. She's one who implements risk strategies in the corporate world, addressing things like cybersecurity and much, much more. Had an opportunity to testify on the Hill. We'll find out what her perspective is on how safe we truly are in just a little while. But we'll kick off the program with a study released on BGov, written by financial analyst Afzal Bari and federal business intelligence analyst Jason Wilson. It's called Companies Face Expanded Federal Role in Cybersecurity, Rules for Securing Critical Infrastructure. Afzal, Jason, thanks a lot for being here. I appreciate it. Congress didn't come to an agreement at all on the cybersecurity Act of 2012 before the election. So they're kind of in a holding pattern at this point. Before we dive into your study, let's break this down a little bit. What exactly are we talking about with regard to cybersecurity?
So there are a couple of things. One is in terms of attacks from abroad, attacks from state actors. So protecting the computer networks against state actors. The other thing is protecting the computer networks against crime, cybercrime. So those are the two things that we're looking at. And really, there are lots of different approaches when it comes to how we should protect the country. So there's pretty much consensus that we need to do something right within Washington, but there's not really consensus on what needs to be done or how that should be done.
Senators Collins, Rockefeller, Feinstein, and Carper are all in there. What's the hang-up with this as we discuss waiting until after the election now to come to a decision?
Yeah, so there are a couple of things. One is one of the hang-ups is on the House side, they have a bill called CISPA, the Cybersecurity Information Sharing Protection Act. That would encourage companies to be able to share information with the federal government and the federal government to be able to share information with companies. On the Senate side, there are a lot of people who think that that doesn't go far enough. It doesn't include any sort of regulation. It doesn't include any requirements that companies do anything. It doesn't require companies that are really part of our critical infrastructure, so for the part of the electrical grid or part of the telecom network, to actually implement any sort of cybersecurity protections.
Let's talk about your study. Companies Face Expanded Federal Role in Cybersecurity, Rules for Securing Critical Infrastructure. The president obviously has many tools at his disposal in order to make something happen should Congress decide to continue this stalemate. Basically means they've given up.
Well, they really haven't given up because there's talk about Reid wants to bring back the cyber legislation during the interim after the election. But the options available to the president, it would be an executive order or a presidential directive. And what the president would do is shop that around at the agencies to get feedback. And there's a draft that's floating around Washington, and it's an update of a Bush-era document, HSPD 7, which is Homeland Security Presidential Directive 7, which looks at critical infrastructure and securing that. This update would basically add a layer of information sharing and monitoring of networks by federal agencies.
So you break this down into a couple of different sections. Emphasis to assessing, fixing, and protecting, near real-time nationwide common operating procedure, create a framework to share information on cyber attacks, consider voluntary as enforceable. Tell me a little bit more about that. That sounds a little Big Brother-ish to me.
Sure, yeah. So one of the things that people have talked about both on Capitol Hill and just within the drafts of the executive order is to have a voluntary mechanism for saying, okay, well, here are the cybersecurity standards for a particular industry, and make it voluntary for companies to sign up for those standards and say, yeah, we meet those standards, we meet these guidelines. One of the things that we pointed out is in other areas of the law, when companies actually sign up for voluntary standards, they can be held to those standards down the road because they've signed up for those standards. So it's voluntary to the fact that to the extent that they can choose whether or not to stand up to opt in for that. Once you've opted in, you should actually consider that as enforceable because so for example with privacy, which is a related issue, with privacy, if you've have a privacy policy, if you have certain standards that you've agreed to adhere to, and you don't live up to those, the FTC and state attorneys general actually have the authority to come after you for not living up to those because you've been deceptive, you haven't lived up to the responsibilities that you've signed up for.
How reactive is this? I'm Mr. Corporation, I've signed the document saying, yeah, I meet all these standards, but I really don't. All of a sudden, I fall apart. If I'm not part of that core infrastructure, do they care?
They may or may not care, so that's an open question.
Okay.
It's really to our BGov subscribers, to our readers, who tend to be companies and tend to be ones that are implementing these policies, hey, if you're going to sign up for these, take it seriously. It's just a message to them.
Understood. You're listening to BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Alan Scott. We're speaking with Afzal Bari and Jason Wilson, authors of the BGov study, Companies Face Expanded Federal Role in Cybersecurity. As we kind of walk through the Homeland Security Presidential Directive, I didn't realize the TSA has so much power. I mean, gas lines, water, explain. When did this happen?
Yeah, sure. So it's the Transportation Security Administration. So the transport of oil and gas is actually within their purview. And one of the things that they have an office of that relates to pipeline safety. And I think there are about 500,000 miles of pipelines crisscrossing throughout the country. And they're responsible. A lot of those are controlled by computers. A lot of those are controlled by industrial control systems, as they call it. And part of what they're looking at is, well, for how do you make sure that those industrial control systems are secure? And right now they don't focus on it. They don't focus on it very much. Right. They have voluntary standards. They have and they rely on industry to come up with the standards and allow industry to monitor itself. So what they've said is that they think industry is doing a good job when it comes to securing that.
Here's a random question. I'm thinking about TSA. I'm thinking about getting quizzed about a gas line at my house when I go to board an airplane. Is everything okay as I'm going through security? I don't know. I need to take a look at a plat now at my yard to make sure that all is well and check with the gas. That aside, what about rail? TSA, I really don't see them at. And I realize I'm getting a little off topic now, but let's say they're carrying a lot of trains do run on electricity, and those are controlled by computers. Has there been any discussion at all about how to regulate that aspect of it, or is that included, kind of rolled in? I realize I'm throwing you a curveball. Well, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, that in the study we talked about the options available. So, I mean, other than volunteer standards, they could use existing regulatory authorities to enact existing standards, and most likely, if they were to go down that route, they would use NIST security controls. So Basically, those are already federal baselines for information security. And so that, if we're looking at the rail system, that could actually affect them directly.
Okay,
but in most cases, the private sector already meets, if not their. Is higher than a lot of the federal baseline. So it'll be interesting to see if they're going to update it or make it stricter for stricter guidelines for critical infrastructure companies alone.
It's interesting because, you know, at BGov, we have a lot of companies, a lot of organizations that are interfacing with the government a lot. And unfortunately, their systems don't always communicate as efficiently as one would like because we're dealing with the government that is woefully behind, technologically speaking. This is going to cost some money that I don't see the government has set aside any. Where is this coming from? What are we talking about dollars and cents wise?
Well, I believe the similar program or a program that's been in existence at DHS Einstein has cost over the past 4 years about $1 billion. And in order to implement what this draft says with near real-time monitoring, I can't even quote a price, but it's gonna be a lot of money to do that, because they have to have sensors in place. Privacy issues and regulation aside, just looking at the tech that's involved in it, they'll have to have sensors in place across the United States and the software and manpower to run this system, and that's going to be a lot of money.
Yeah,
you know. More than the Einstein program combined.
And there are actually two fine points we should probably make at this point. So one is that the Homeland Security Presidential Directive draft, that update, it doesn't tell companies to do anything. It tells agencies to do something, and it tells agencies to update the regulations. It tells mm-hmm. agencies to create this near real-time operating framework. So an ability to see in near real-time what is hitting the country in terms of cybersecurity attacks.
And Congress actually also has authorized increased funding through their continuing resolution for federal network security. They actually increased it.
A request.
Over their request. Yeah. So they actually added money in a time of sequestration, or the threat of it. They actually added money for DHS and cybersecurity.
Okay, that's pretty funny, because we're talking about sequestration, and you can't build half a ship, but the computer that you use to cut the die for the ship, we're going to upgrade that.
Yep.
Very good. So the study is called Companies Face Expanded Federal Role in Cybersecurity. Guys, thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You're listening to Bloomberg Government's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My name is Alan Scott. We're talking cybersecurity, and we figured we'd bring someone in who has real-world experience with this topic. Her name is Kirsten Todd Kuhn. Kirsten is the president and CEO of Liberty Group Ventures and specializes in risk management, strategic development, and of course, implementation. Kirsten, how are you?
I'm great, Alan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. So you had an opportunity to hear Afzal and Jason a moment ago, who are still here in the room, by the way. Hi, guys.
Hey.
There you go. What did you think? I also sent you a copy of their study. Before I get your opinion on that, give us a little bit about your background. I mean, it's actually very interesting where you've been.
Sure. Well, we were just talking. My government background is I'd spent some time in the White House and on Capitol Hill, and I was working for Senator Lieberman in the summer of 2001. And that was the summer that Senator Jeffords switched and flipped the majority to the Democrats. And so Senator Lieberman became chair of at the time, what was called the Governmental Affairs Committee. It's now the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Mm-hmm. And my first assignment for him was to do a hearing on critical infrastructure protection, which was scheduled for September 12, 2001. 9/11 happened, and Senator Lieberman made the decision to go through with the hearing on the 12th for its obvious relevance. It was a very different hearing than what was initially planned with different witnesses because of travel and all of those things. But in that hearing was when Senator Lieberman turned to a group of us and said, we need to have a Department of Homeland Security. At the time, those words weren't even put together. They felt very Cold War-esque.
Sure.
But looking at what had happened the day before and his knowledge of the Hart-Rudman Commission went forward to say, we need to be putting together some legislation on this. And a group of us worked for about 9 months on what appeared to be a futile task until President Bush came out in June with the counter proposal. And then we spent the next several months negotiating the department. So a lot of people will say there are a group of us that are responsible for what hasn't worked and what has worked. But it's been an interesting journey to watch implementation of something of this magnitude.
Given your experience and what you've seen, what you know, how prepared is the U.S. for a cyber attack?
Well, so it's an interesting question because when we were drafting the legislation, one of the big issues at the time and the pressure that everybody was feeling was, how do we prevent this from happening again? Mm-hmm. How do we make sure we never have a tragedy like this? But as a crisis manager, as an emergency manager, when you look at all of the things that have happened over the last 11 years, the issue is not about preventing anymore. We understand that these are not questions of if but when, but it's about resiliency. It's about focusing on how do we recover from something, how do we respond, and how resilient are we to bounce back quickly. So that, when we can apply that to all components of crisis management, particularly cyber. So there is always going to be the hacker or the group that's going to be one step ahead or that's figured out the entry point. And what we need to be doing is building resilient infrastructure, building resilient cyber infrastructure, so that when that does happen, we respond quickly, we recover quickly, and we know that we can get back to resuming normal operations as fast as possible.
You had an opportunity to testify on the Hill in front of the Subcommittee on Cybersecurity, Infrastructure, Protection and Security Technologies, and Emergency Preparedness, Response and Communications. And it was a joint hearing.
That took up my entire briefing time.
What was your experience like there? How well were you received? What was the message you were trying to convey?
Well, that hearing focused a lot on technology, how mm-hmm. first responders were using technology. And the key there was looking at how do we get the technology that the government is building at the federal level down to the first responders. And I think, you know, everybody who was there listening, trying to figure out what to do with this issue, because we have a lot of money since 9/11 that's gone toward R&D spending. And we need to make sure that it's getting to the people who are using it, and also make sure that we know what their needs are, so that when we develop the technology, we're matching needs with resources.
You worked for Joseph Lieberman.
I did.
Recently quoted as saying, U.S. must do more to guard against a cyber 911. Having been in his office and knowing what he's thinking, is he nervous at this point, or is he frustrated? What's going on in his mind?
So I would, concerned okay. would be the word I would use. I think any government leader who has insight and knowledge about cybersecurity should be concerned. The issue is that we have gone through this legislation debate. We're paralyzed by debate right now. One of the questions you asked is really, you know, what are we debating between? And we've got a group of people that are saying regulations and standards to the private sector are going to stifle innovation, and they're not going to be able to act effectively. And then you have a group that says, but the government is responsible for national security, and clearly not enough is being done. The other challenge here is that we've had time with voluntary standards and allowing the private sector to buy in optionally. And that hasn't worked. For a lot of reasons, there hasn't been the desire, the ability on the part of the private sector to share, to cooperate. They're looking for liability protection. Mm-hmm. There is legislation, there are regulations that can be enacted that will change that. The issue, so Secretary Panetta had a speech last Thursday
yep.
In front of Benz. And, you know, Benz was not a haphazard choice. Benz, Business Executives for National Security, they're a well-known nonprofit whose audience is highly decorated military officials as well as CEOs of companies. He was in New York, which is the hub of the finance world that has been recently struck by a series of very serious cyber attacks. And he said, we're worried about a digital Pearl Harbor. And the issue here is that we have waited long enough. We've been warned. You know, we know, we've seen the attacks, how they're escalating, how the cybersecurity, that evolution is escalating, and we need to do something, and we need to do it now.
Back in 2011, RSA, the company that makes the little fobs that every government, I know you listening right now, probably holding one in your hand at this point, makes the little fobs that grant secure access to stuff, networks. Their network was compromised. Data was stolen and used in a later break-in at Lockheed Martin. After originally people said, oh no, we think they're going to use this for a much larger scale event of some sort. Don't worry, you other companies are going to be fine. What do you know? Lockheed Martin gets broken into just a few months later. That information, obviously they've replaced the fobs, they've done a lot of things to shore themselves up, but the technology behind, the infrastructure that's used to create that secure pathway has been compromised. And what are you telling your corporate customers who may be using these secure fobs?
I think the key in conveying this to customers is making them aware that nothing is foolproof.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to make sure what is being secured by these technologies, and do you have redundancy in your security? So you're not just relying on one line of defense, and being very thoughtful and proactive and strategic about having multiple lines of security. And so it goes to the equivalent of, you don't just have one password, but you have the password and the fingerprint. They're different, you know.
Sounds like Bloomberg. I guess we're prepared.
I was going to say, you guys are really resilient. I mean, the key is, it's. I hope it doesn't become the buzzword that loses the meaning right now, but it's the resiliency is really important. I mean, it is. We are no longer talking about prevention. It is really about, how do you recover quickly? How do you respond? And what are you doing to make sure that when your first line of defense goes down, you have something else to back yourselves up, to back the company up?
Afzal, Jason, you guys have any questions for Kirsten at all?
Yeah, so do you agree that cyber insecurity will always exist? And that's why it's really important to have this notion of network resiliency.
I do, and I think that it is a concept that extends beyond cybersecurity. Again, it goes to that, we're never gonna be foolproof. And if we have that approach, we're always going to hold on too tightly, and we're not going to be able to reach the solutions that we need to reach. And so we go in with the premise that we are going to be attacked. And the key then is, again, you know, how do we make sure that those attacks cause the least amount of damage and that we can resume operations as quickly as possible? And I think that's the focus.
Kirsten, any parting thoughts? What would you like to tell us? How should we go about securing our home networks? Do we need to worry about that? No, electricity. I saw a commercial where garage door openers can continue to open if you have this one special one that stores up electricity and should the grid get attacked.
Well, apparently now you're responsible for your gas line when you go to TSA,
right?
So you should be all set. It's one other element that's important to what Secretary Panetta said last week, which is that the Pentagon will now have responsibility for defending private sector computers. And that is a revision to the policy before. It's a revision of responsibility, and it's an escalation of responsibility. He was very clear that that only would happen if there was a threat of serious physical destruction and loss of life. But that change in thinking is one that is certainly critical and noteworthy and a sign of where we're going.
Her name is Kirsten Todd-Kuhn. She is the president and CEO of Liberty Group Ventures. Give us a phone number where you can be reached.
703-989-5385.
And a website?
www.libertygroupventures.com.
Thank you very much for being a part of the show.
Thanks very much, Alan. It's a pleasure.
Afzal Bari, Jason Wilson, thanks again for being a part of the program. The study, again, is called Companies Face Expanded Federal Role in Cybersecurity: Rules for Securing Critical Infrastructure. You can find it all on bgov.com. Don't forget to watch Bloomberg Government's TV show Capital Gains on WUSA TV9 right after Face the Nation, Sunday mornings at 11:30. It's hosted by Peter Cook, who in fact recently had an opportunity to sit down with General Hayden and talk about this very topic that we were talking about today, cybersecurity. Here's how it went.
General Michael Hayden headed the Central Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency for President Bush. He's now a principal with the Chertoff Group Global Security Advisory Firm here in Washington. First of all, General, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Peter.
The big question here, first of all, how prepared is this country for the cyber threats of today?
Certainly not as well prepared as we need to be. I think my successor at the National Security Agency, General Alexander, was asked a similar question in open testimony, and he said on a scale of 0 to 10, we're kind of at 3, which shouldn't be comforting for anyone in terms of the real and present dangers that exist out there in the cyber domain.
General Hayden with Peter Cook from Bloomberg Government's Capital Gains, seen Sunday mornings on WUSA TV9 at 11:30, right after Face the Nation. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at BloombergGov. Go ahead and follow me at Alan L. Scott. We'll get together again next Thursday at 11 a.m. We'll have plenty more to say about the business impact of government actions. For BGov's Capital Impact on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., I'm Alan Scott.
Do government actions impact your business? When you need to know the impact of legislative, regulatory, and government spending actions on your business, turn to Bloomberg Government. Bloomberg Government is a web-based service with comprehensive government-related news, data, and analysis. From government spending and federal contract data to legislative and regulatory updates to empower you to make informed decisions. To learn more about Bloomberg Government and to register for a live demonstration, visit bgov.com, where government actions meet business decisions.